ভগবতে
বাসুদেবায়
ওম নমো ভগবতে
বাসুদেবায়
ওম নমো ভগবতে
বাসুদেবায়
শ্রী ভগবান উপাচ্য ইত্যেতদ ব্রহ্মণা পুত্রা অশ্রুত্যাত মানুষাসনম সনন্দনম অথানু নুর্চু নর্চু সিদ্ধাজ্ঞাত্মনো কথিম শ্রী ভগবান উপাচ্য ইত্যেতদ ব্রহ্মণা পুত্রা অশ্রুত্যাত মানুষাসনম সনন্দনম অথানর্চু সিদ্ধাজ্ঞাত্মনো কথিম শ্রী ভগবান উপাচ্য ইত্যেতদ ব্রহ্মণা পুত্রা অশ্রুত্যাত মানুষাসনম সনন্দনম অথানর্চু সিদ্ধাজ্ঞাত্মনো কথিম
you
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Lord Sri Narayan Rishi said, Iti, thus, Etat, this, Brahmana, O Brahma, Putra, the sons, Asurutya, having heard, Atma, about the self, Anushashanam, instruction, Sanandanam, the sage Sanandana, Atta, then, Anarchu, they worshipped, Siddha, perfectly satisfied, Gyatva, understanding, Atmanaha, their own, Gatim, ultimate destination. The Supreme Lord, Sri Narayan Rishi, said, having heard these instructions about the Supreme Self, the Personality of Godhead, the sons of Brahma now understood their final destination. They felt perfectly satisfied and honored Sanandana with their worship. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that Atma Nushashanam can be understood both as instructions given to benefit the Jiva souls and as instructions about the living entity's relationship with the foundation of all existence. Similarly, Atmano Gatim means both the destination of the Jiva soul and the means of reaching the Supreme Soul. By hearing the 28 prayers of the personified Vedas, which comprise the elucidation of the Brahmopanishad, spoken at the beginning of this chapter, the sages assembled in Brahmaloka made great progress toward their goal of pure love of God.
Om Ajnantimidandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshuru Nididam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Yatati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Sutapatakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sadrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Pitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadadutam Harijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanditam Cha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Hatta Kansana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
I offer my gratitude to all of the assembled devotees. Today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 87, entitled The Prayers of the Personified Vedas, Text 42. In the previous chapter, Shukadev Goswami concluded with the story of Krishna going to Mithila to meet his two beloved devotees, Bahulaswa, who was the royal king, who resided in a magnificent palace, had a family, had armies, had autonomous control over mass treasury, and Shrutadeva, who was a simple Brahmin, who by material standards lived what we would consider poverty. He begged for alms, little rice, that's what grows up there. A little hut with no furniture. They both offered Krishna their invitation. Krishna tells in Gita, Samoham Sarva Bhutesho, that he's equal to everyone. The only thing that Krishna sees of any value in all of creation is devotion, love, compassion. So they were both equally wealthy, and at the same time they were both equally detached. In the second canto, actually the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti addresses Krishna as a kinchana gochara. Great wealth, knowledge, fame, high birth, she declared are potentially the greatest disqualifications to actually connect with Krishna. Because the tendency of having any of those things is they can make us proud. And that pride is the one and only reality that keeps us bound to this material world. The entire creation and all of our conditionings and all of our sufferings are built on a house with the foundation of the ahankar, the false ego. We may have just a little one-room flat built on that foundation, or we may have a skyscraper with 102 floors, What is important is we understand why there is suffering in this world, why we are disconnected from our Supreme Source or Krishna. A Kinchana is one who does not feel he or she has anything. Everything is God's property. Krishna tells in Gita, Sarva Loka Maheshwara, our body, our mind, our power of intelligence, our material bodily facilities, our influence, they are all God's property. And when we simply recognize that and live with that humility, depending on His mercy at every step in our life, living in harmony with His wishes, ultimately, everyone is very dear to Krishna. But those who are willing to surrender the most dear thing in all of creation, our ego, for Krishna's pleasure, yayatamam prapatyante, Krishna reciprocates, we are most dear. And when He reveals Himself to us, He is most dear to us. After they both offered the best they could, Krishna accepted them all with equal happiness and gave them both the same exact equal destination. Loving devotion to Himself. And he explained to Shrutadeva, who just offered very sweet prayers, that these sages who are with me, you should honor them, you should worship them, just exactly as you would worship me, because they are very dear to me. These Brahmins, these sages that came along with Krishna, they were traveling throughout the lands, serving Krishna by spreading Krishna's message, by sharing Krishna's message. And because that service is so dear to the Lord, Krishna considers Himself to be the servant of such a devotee. In fact, Krishna tells Shrutadeva and Bahulasva that you cannot actually please me and properly worship me unless you give appropriate worship and service to my devotees. And that's the conclusion of the chapter. In this chapter, 87, Parikshit Maharaj begins with this question. The Brahmins, they are speaking from Vedas. But the Vedas mainly deal with material nature. Even Krishna tells us, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjana Nirdvanvo Nitya Shakvashto Niyo Prakshima Atmavan. That the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. But we should understand that the purpose of all of them is to rise above these modes of nature, to be transcendental to all of them. Vedaishya Saravera Hameva Vidyo Vedanta Krit Veda Vedevacha. Krishna tells, I am the original source of the Vedas. I'm the goal of the Vedas. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. So why would Krishna deal with the three modes of material nature so much in the Vedic literature? It is for the purpose of elevating our consciousness to be situated properly in the mode of goodness, sattva guna, so that we could actually be receptive to the transcendental plane of bhakti yoga. The four regulative principles we follow, we vow at the time of initiation. In and of themselves, they are not transcendental. They're just giving us some principles of the mode of goodness. But then we find in the Vedic literature, to become an actual devotee, there are so many values, so many principles that we must imbibe in our life. Truthfulness, humility, honesty, determination. And when the mode of goodness is directed toward the loving service of Krishna, and whatever influences of passion and ignorance may be there, we try to also transcend them by engaging them in the loving service of Krishna. Then our consciousness rises above the modes of nature. Because the jiva, the soul, is transcendental. It is satchit ananda. It is eternal. It is part and parcel of Krishna. Mamayavam so jiva loke. Jiva bhuta sanatana. So we are transcendental. But since time immemorial, being encaged within these material bodies, we have become so much affected by the infatuation of the ahankar or the ego. Janasya mohoyam aham mameti. Everyone in the world, everywhere, every species of life are all thinking in terms of I and mine. I am this body. I am these thought patterns of the various samskaras or influences that I have experienced throughout this life and countless previous lives. And so many designations for this body, we think to be me and mine, our possessions, our particular religious faith, our nationality, our caste, the particular clubs or organizations we may belong to. Our abilities, our intelligence. We're all thinking this is mine. It's all built on this ahankar, this false ego. So the purpose of all the Vedas is to gradually bring us to the platform where we actually are willing to appreciate the truth. Jivera Swarupoi Krishna Nityadas. I'm eternally a servant of Krishna. And Varnashram Dharma is the path of living according to our responsibilities, according to our nature, according to our guna, our karma, our particular duties and place in society. And Daivi Varnashram is to perform all these duties to dovetail, as Prabhupada would say, our nature and all the gifts that we have in life, the gift of the capacity to think, to breathe, the gift of having a heart that beats. You may not be appreciating that with every heartbeat, but if you have a heart attack, you start to appreciate it. You may not appreciate the breath, that every breath you breathe, but if you have an asthma attack, you appreciate it. You may not appreciate the nice little house and food that you have, but if there's an earthquake and you lose your house and there's nothing to eat, then you appreciate what you had. It's an unfortunate condition, but it's a reality for practically everyone in the world. We don't really appreciate how these things are gifts of God until we either lose them or we're on the verge of losing them. And that's why Krishna creates the universe. In the commentaries of this chapter, it is described how the Supreme Truth, Parameshwar, Krishna, creates this cosmic manifestation and gives the jiva, the soul, within his creative potency, intelligence, a mind, senses, and the vital airs of life. And all species have various degrees of these created elements. They give us an opportunity to try to enjoy, to fulfill our desires. We want to be controllers, enjoyers, proprietors. And when you hear dogs barking, it's hard for us to understand the psychology of dogs. But Srila Prabhupada, knowing the soul, he was explaining when the dogs are going ruff, ruff, ruff. They are protecting what they believe is their property. This is my house. Or we have sometimes walked through the streets of India and there's packs of dogs attacking each other because they come into their area. Yes? It may be your property from a perspective of you have the legal title and the deed and you bought it by honest procedures. So it's your property. But when a dog comes on your property and sees another dog, wah, 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 this is my property. Because they have these territorial ego. They have this need to feel this is mine. But then you can take, a stick and chase the dog away because it's your property. Yes? But he's identifying it as much as you are, as his property or her property, and you're thinking it's your property. But then the government can come with a stick and kick you off. And eventually, Yamaraj comes with his stick. And gives evidence, very solid evidence, that nothing is ours. Our body isn't ours. What to speak of all these things that we claim to be mine and I. So ultimately, the material world, because everything's temporary, we can enjoy. We have to suffer so many things through so many species, and then we come to the human form of life. And the Vedas provide mainly the principles of Artha, Kama, Tama, Moksha, ways of living a happier life through economic development, through particular pious religious ceremonies and faiths, to performing our duty with dignity and integrity according to God's laws. And ultimately we can achieve liberation, moksha. But when, even through this process, the pursuit of moksha actually is due to the realization of the limitations and the frustrations of anything except transcending the modes of nature. And all the miseries, all the sufferings, all the disturbances, and also all the enjoyments that cause us happiness and then later frustrations, they're all created by Krishna, by His grace, for one purpose only. And this is emphasized. It's His compassion. It's His love. We may be rushed to accomplish something, but when you understand the realm of eternity and the nature of the eternal soul, Krishna creates this entire cosmic manifestation so that every spirit soul could eventually come back to His eternal loving service in His abode. He gives us the facility to go through so many different species of life, to come to the human form of life, to experiment in so many ways, to suffer in so many ways, to enjoy fleeting things in so many ways, to elevate ourselves to heavenly planets, to attain mystic yogic powers. So Krishna's patient. For Him it's not a long time. For us everything's a long time. When you only have 80 or 90 years maximum, maybe 100 to live, then every minute's a long time because it's a major portion of our lifetime. But for Krishna, who recognizes us as eternal souls with no beginning and no end, 8,400,000 species of life is not such a long time. But when we come to the human form after passing through so many, then we understand how every moment is precious. We should not waste a moment. The Bhagavad Gita concludes, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papibhyo Moksha Isami Mahasaja. Abandon all varieties of dharma and just surrender to Me. But the surrender has to be real. It has to be sincere. As Srila Prabhupada explains, it should be without ulterior motives, to be sincere and serious. Surrender means to truly humble ourselves, to truly recognize that I'm completely dependent on Krishna's grace, and to realize everything that Krishna has created within the entire universe is His compassion to ultimately bring us home back to Godhead. There can be so many novelists, scientists, philosophers who could give their opinions of what the purpose of creation is. But there's only one person who really knows it, and that's the Creator. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati Bharata. And he comes to this world again and again and again to teach us what this creation is for. To utilize all these gifts of our intelligence, our senses, our mind, our vital airs in harmony with the supreme purpose. Samsudhir Haritoshana, to please Krishna. And that essentially is what surrender is. The simplest thing. Just to humble ourselves to the truth. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahuram yovidhati kaman. What is that truth? That we're all dependent on Krishna. Krishna tells in Gita that when you have thus learned the truth, you will know that all living beings are in me, are of me, and are mine. So, Parikshit Maharaj is asking Sukadev Goswami that the Vedas are filled with so many descriptions of how to elevate ourselves through these three modes of nature. And words are some, sound is one of the material elements. The ether or the space, it is connected with sound. Because sound doesn't just go through air, it travels through space. So how could a material word or words describe the absolute truth, who's beyond material, who's nirguna, who has no material characteristics, qualities, or form, who's completely transcendental? This was the question of Parikshit. How the Vedas could actually describe the absolute, which is beyond words, beyond any material conception. Sukadev Goswami, like so many people, could say, I know the answer, and try to present themselves as being very original. I figured it out. I realized it. Sukadev Goswami said, actually, that same question was asked by Narada Muni to Narayan Rishi. Because Narada Muni was traveling around, and he went to Badrikashram, and there he found Narayan Rishi, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He incarnated in Badrikashram to perform tapasya. Why would God want to perform tapasya? Most people don't want to perform tapasya, but they're willing to endure it for a higher purpose. But he is the higher purpose. Out of compassion, to show us the way, he performs tapasya. He performs tapasya to fill the world with blessings and to give an example for the purification of all beings. Again, his only purpose of creating this cosmic manifestation and his only purpose for coming into the cosmic manifestation is essentially to show compassion. Compassion is the expression of his eternal, infinite love for every being. He was sitting with great sages and rishis from the village of Kalapa. Narada Muni asked him this question. How could the Vedas describe the Supreme Absolute Truth? Sri Narayan Rishi could have said, I'm the source of all knowledge, I will tell you. He said that same question was asked previously, and I'd like to tell you the answer. This is Krishna. Kaunti aprati janehi name bhakta pranashyati. Krishna tells Arjuna, you declare it boldly, and my devotee will never perish. Krishna takes greater happiness giving his devotees credit. That's love. A loving father or mother takes more joy in seeing the success of their children than if they do it themselves, if they actually love their children. It's natural. Srila Prabhupada was asked, Lord Chaitanya told that this holy name of Krishna should be spread throughout every town and village, throughout the world. Why didn't he do it himself? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was envisioning this. Why didn't he do it himself? Prabhupada said they could have, but they saved that service for me. So Srila Prabhupada took no credit. But he was revealing to us the nature of Krishna's love. Sri Narayan Rishi tells Narada Muni that long ago on Janaloka, the great sages, including the four Kumaras, who were born from the mind of Brahma, they were together. They were discussing so many transcendental subjects. He explained, they were equal. Among the four Kumaras, they were all born simultaneously from Lord Brahma. They all took their vows of Brahmacharya on the same day. They all got their father angry on the same day. They were all cursed by Jaya and Vijaya on the same day. I'm sorry, they cursed by Jaya and Vijaya on the same day in the gates of Vaikuntha. They all had darshan of Lord Narayan at the gate of Vaikuntha at the same moment. Each of them, they smelled the fragrance of the tulsi leaves mixed with chandan, sandalwood, on the same day. Atmaramas Jamunayo. This verse, the Atmaram verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, was described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to both Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Sanatan Goswami. He gave great importance to this verse. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describing it in so much detail. One verse, entire chapters of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. How important it is, and describes even liberated souls who are Atmarama, who have realized the eternal self, who have attained mukti, moksha. What to speak of those who have realized the heavenly worlds or the great yogic cities? Even the highest liberated souls, when they come in contact with the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, who is so beautiful, who is so sweet, who is so loving, who is so lovable, that they surrender to Krishna. That love is the highest, it's the most inclusive. the most complete form of self-realization. And those personalities who have attained every other level of self-realization, ultimately, when they experience Krishna, who is all attractive, Aishwaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yashashashriya. He has the six opulences in full. He's the ultimate object of love for every soul. When they connect Param Drishvani Vartute, they don't really care anything about any other goal. They just want to please Krishna. Na danam na janam na sundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatad bhakti rahoita kitvai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, I do not want wealth or the pleasures of the opposite sex. I do not want great knowledge or fame. I don't even want freedom from suffering. Not even liberation from birth and death. I simply want to serve you and please you. That is surrender. The four Kumaras are the examples that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives for Atmarama. Together they attained mukti, the highest liberation on that level. And together when they contacted Krishna, they accepted bhakti as their life and soul. They composed a samhita, which is the basic of an entire sampradaya. There are four sampradayas. The four Kumaras are the acharya of one, the original acharya of one sampradaya. All the other sampradayas have one founder: Brahma, Shiva, Lakshmi. But here we have four. And it's not that one is favored over the other. They were all born the same time, they all took brahmacharya the same time, they all attained liberation the same time, they all attained love of Godhead the same time, they founded their own sampradaya at the same time. So all four of them are together. But three are inquiring from Sanandana. Now in the Nimbark Sampradaya, which is from the Kumars, there's the Sanat Kumar Samhita. So usually Sanat Kumar is considered very prominent among the four Kumars. But here Sanat Kumar is also sitting and asking Sanandana, how could the Vedas describe the absolute truth? How could that which is beyond the modes of material nature be described within the realm of the modes of material nature? It's quite logical if we think about it more deeply. Srila Prabhupada explained, the eyes are made out of flesh and water and some ingredients of air and ether and fire. So the eyes can only perceive that which is of those same ingredients. How could the eyes see God, who's nirguna, who has no material attributes? Ishvara Parama, Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. The reality is the eyes cannot see. But by Krishna's grace, if we have devotion, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. If we awaken our love, then Krishna can reveal himself through our eyes. That's Krishna's power. Some people, when they see the deity, they're confused. Why are these people making these wonderful temples and putting all this beautiful ornaments and serving in so many ways, cooking and cleaning and going out and doing so many other services, all for the deity? Doesn't make sense. It's a statue. But actually, when we hear from the Vedas about Krishna's transcendental nature, and when we hear them from those devotees who have faith, who have devotion, who are surrendering, then it comes alive to us. And even if we're not liberated, when we see the beautiful form of the deities, because our bhakti is awakened by the faith we get in Vaishnavas, through the scriptures. So when we see the deity, something happens in our life. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, do not try to see Krishna. Try to serve Krishna in such a way that Krishna is happy to see you. Krishna reciprocates. And ultimately, as we be in our preliminary stages of bhakti, by Krishna's causeless mercy, he attracts us to the sound vibration of the holy name, to the form of the deity, to the taste of his Mahaprasad, to the smell of his Mahaprasad, to the touch that we experience in our archana, in our seva. Through our senses, Krishna gradually reveals himself. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita goes through quite elaborate explanation of how each and every one of our senses can experience Krishna directly. And that experience invokes the highest happiness, the highest liberation. He's describing what he experienced, what a devotee can experience when they taste prasad. The four Kumaras, they went into eternal ecstasy just by smelling the tulsi leaves that were on the feet of Lord Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj was meditating on Vishnu in his heart, and when he opened his eyes, he saw the Supreme Personality of God. He was completely transformed. Gopis of Vrindavan, they're criticizing Lord Brahma. Who dares to criticize Lord Brahma? The gopis. That when we see you, Krishna, we're desiring millions and millions and millions and millions of eyes to see you. One eye is, two eyes is not enough. And even with these two eyes, Brahma is such an imperfect creator. He made these eyelids that blink. And the blink of our eyelids obstructs our vision of your beautiful form. It seems like a yuga. That nimesh of the blinking of an eye seems like a yuga to the gopi. Because their eyes are spiritualized, transcendentalized. By engaging our senses, the same senses we have now, in devotional service, Sarvapadimanirmaktam tatpavatvena niyamalam Rishikena Rishikesha sevanam bhaktiruchyate. By engaging our senses in the loving service of Rishikesh, our senses become purified, they become spiritualized, and then with these very senses we have now, we can perceive Krishna reveals himself to us. So the four Kumaras, they were so eager to hear from one who was among them. Srimad Bhagavatam describes they were equal in every way. They didn't see the difference between friends and enemies. They saw the spirit soul in the heart of every living being. They were completely detached from everything material, totally liberated from any false ego. Everything one had, the others had, in full. And it's not that, okay, today Sanandana is giving Srimad Bhagavatam class, so, you know, I have to go. Otherwise, you know, I might disrupt the ashram or something. And then, he's looking at the clock, when's he gonna finish? I already know this stuff. Why is he saying this to me? I already know it. We learned it together. That's a symptom of an unenlightened person. If that's our mood, that means if we're sincere and honest, we'll recognize that means I'm not enlightened. Much chitamat kataprana bodhiyantas parasparam. Katayantaschamam nityam tushyanti charamanti cha. Devotees take shelter of Krishna. Krishna is their shelter. And they enjoy enlightening one another. Their greatest happiness by speaking about him. So these three Kumaras, among the other rishis, they may have known the answer, but in their natural humility, you could never really know. That's the nature of Krishna. Great souls who love Krishna, they don't think that they love Krishna. Srila Prabhupada cites Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Who could love Krishna more than Srimati Radharani? Radha Bhavaduti Subalitam Nomi Krishna Swarupa. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna with the Mahabhav, the love of Sri Radha, to taste the sweetness of Krishna. To taste the sweetness of Krishna as Radharani is tasting. That's why Krishna came in this form. And he jumped in the Ganga and he was pulled out by Haridasa and Nityananda Prabhu. He said, why did you take me out? I have no love for Krishna. If I had love for Krishna, how could I live in separation for him? The fact that I'm still breathing, that I'm still alive, it means that I have no love for Krishna. When we appreciate the greatness of Krishna, the ecstasy of our love doesn't make us think, now I am God. It makes us realize that Krishna is all the beautiful, incredible qualities of Krishna's form, his nature, his qualities, his pastimes, his abode, his love are unlimited. If there's an ocean and you understand a drop, Are you proud that I understand every drop in the ocean? Well, if you understand one drop, it makes you appreciate what is the ocean? Limitless drops. So the Kumaras, they just loved Krishna so much together. There was no competition. Who's going to speak? They just all wanted to share the beauty and the joys of Krishna together. And they were all thinking, I don't know. Please tell me. The four Kumaras, while they were sitting together, Sanandanan, he explained. Again, he didn't say, I know. He said, this same subject was discussed at the beginning of creation. At that time, Lord Mahavishnu, Karuna Dakshayi, was in his mystic sleep. Previously, through his inhalation, he brought all the universes into his body, and they became unmanifested. And when it was time to recreate them all for the purposes that we've already been discussing, the first thing that came out of his breath before everything else was the Vedas. In other words, before even beginning the whole process of creation, he creates the knowledge and the purpose of creation. So as he is exhaling 28 personifications of Vedas, the Shrutis, appear. And he's still sleeping. And their service to him, although they're totally conscious that they just came out of his body through his breath, and they're meant to guide all humanity for all time, they began to chant these beautiful prayers to wake up the Lord. And this is the prayers of the personified Veda. And Sanandana Kumar is describing these 28 prayers that were recited by the personified Vedas before creation, at the very beginning. Which are describing the answer to the question that everybody's been asking so far. How the Absolute Truth is beyond material existence, how he creates, why he creates, and ultimately how every living being is only meant to love and to serve him. And how ultimately the illusory energy is so powerful, so strong, it cannot be overcome by any means except taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. Bahunan janmanamante gyanavamam papadyate vasudeva saravameti samahatma sadurlava. After many, many, many births and deaths of accumulating knowledge, when one comes finally to the platform of true knowledge, one surrenders to Vasudeva, knowing him to be the cause of all causes and all there is. The ultimate shelter. That takes great humility to take shelter. The personified Vedas offer these prayers. Prayer is such a significant principle within the Vedic literatures. it's so prominent. It's how so much knowledge is revealed to us. All the great avatars, when we read the scriptures, how they appeared, most all of them came because of the prayers of great souls. When Bhumi Devi was being trampled by demoniac rulers, being exploited, she approached Brahma, and along with the devatas and the shore of the ocean of milk, they offered the Purusha Shukta prayers. Beautiful prayers glorifying the Lord and seeking shelter of the Lord. They understood that the problems that there were was beyond them. The demigods. What to speak of us little humans who get so proud that I could solve my own problems. I could change the world. Demigods who live much longer, who have much greater intelligence and physical strength. They're helpless before the challenges of material existence. Even Brahma and Shiva, they all went to the ocean of milk and offered prayers. Please, Krishna, save us and save the world. Out of compassion for those who were suffering, they prayed to Krishna. And then Krishna appeared in the womb of Devaki. And here his mother and father are prisoners. Not a very prestigious place in society, being prisoners. Krishna was in the womb of Devaki in the prison. And at that time, the demigods came to the prison. Amazing. When you think of demigods, they're living in the most luxurious circumstances beyond our imagination. But they're coming to the prison to offer their prayers to Krishna in the womb. Beautiful prayers, with so much knowledge, with so much enlightenment, with so much guidance for all living beings. It's really incredible how almost all the prayers of these great souls to the Lord, they're totally humbling themselves. They're seeking total shelter of the Lord, but they're also praying in such a way that's for the benefit of all living beings. And then little Krishna takes birth. First as Lord Vishnu, Vasudev, and by his instruction, his mother Devaki prays that please disguise this opulent form of the Supreme Lord, because Kamsa doesn't like you. So on the basis of her prayer, Krishna becomes a little babe Vishnu, who's holding the Sudarshan Chakra. Devaki sees the Lord with the Sudarshan Chakra. Of course, there's the club and the lotus flower and the conch shell of victory, but his Sudarshan Chakra is there too. And she's praying in her motherly affection that Kamsa might hurt you if he knows that you're Vishnu. So to satisfy her wish, she becomes a little baby. And he asks Vasudev, please take me across the river where I'll be safe. And there he was brought to Nanda Maharaj's house. And just within the first few days of his birth, little infant Krishna liberated Putana. she was single-handedly more powerful than all the armies with all the arsenals on the entire earth today. She was quite extraordinary. And Krishna didn't even use a weapon. He didn't use his Sudarshan Chakra. He didn't use a bow and arrow. He didn't use his club. He just drank her milk. That was good enough. So Krishna performed so many incredible, transcendental pastimes when he was just a little child at Brahmandagat. He ate dirt, and Yashoda Mai looked in his mouth and saw the entire universe with all the oceans, all the planets, all the mountains, all living beings, all demigods. But in his little mouth, how could the Lord be described in words? But these words are transcendental. When we have faith in them, Krishna reciprocates and actually reveals the truth of these words within our hearts. That's the science. You cannot understand by your intelligence, but if you apply your intelligence with humility, tadvidi pranipatina pariprasnena sevaya upatekshantite jnana jnaninastatvadarshana. Krishna says, if you want to understand the truth, and param satyam dimehi, the supreme truth is Krishna, Vasudev. If we want to understand the truth, we approach a guru with submissiveness, and we inquire, and we're eager to serve. And when those qualities are there, then Krishna's pleased. Then he reveals himself, little by little. And then these sound vibrations. Srila Prabhupada even said, even if you don't understand the words of the Gayatri Mantra or the Hare Krishna Mantra, still, if you have a receptive heart, Krishna will reveal himself through those words. If we just have faith, Krishna reciprocates. Ultimately, everything is based on how Krishna reciprocates with our sincerity. And so many other prayers I'm going to end soon. Indra. Well, before that, Brahma. Brahma himself. He already was there at the ocean of milk. He was already there in the prison house of Kamsa. He knew that this child is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And who knows more than Brahma? Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikavye. That Krishna revealed the Vedas within this universe first to Brahma. First the Vedas wake up Krishna, and then Krishna delivers those Vedas to Brahma. And Brahma becomes a great guru and the father of all beings. But still, material existence is so limitlessly complex and powerful that even Brahma falls under illusion. He sees this little cowherd boy and he wants to test him because his understanding, he's God. But if he's God, why is he taking the food from the plates of these little cowherd boys, his friends, and eating it? He's Yajnabhuk. We're supposed to be all making all offerings to him. And he's taking the prasad of the cowherd boys. This is Krishna's love. When Krishna would taste the prasad from the plates of the cowherd boys. And even the cowherd boys would bite it and say, Krishna, this is really good, taste it. Krishna enjoyed it so much. We follow so many rules and regulations. If we go on the altar and try to bite something and say, Krishna, this is good, taste it. And we will not survive. But they're doing, and Krishna's liking. So Brahma's confused. What is this? And he kidnapped all the calves and little gopas. And when Krishna manifests himself in each and every one of them, and Brahma saw, and was wondering, how is this happening? I've hidden them, and yet they're still here. And then each one became Narayan. There were limitless calves. He saw unlimited Narayans right in this little bank of the Yamuna. And then Krishna just became himself again. Just a little boy with a lump of dahi and rice in his hand. And Brahma understood who he was. He offered beautiful prayers. Prayers that give light and hope and knowledge for the entire humanity for all time. And Indra, he also was under illusion. He tried to destroy the whole Brajbhumi and all the Brijbasis. And after Krishna held up the Govardhan Hill for 7 days and seven nights, Indra was really humbled. And he approached his guru, Brahma. So Brahma called him a fool and told him to approach Surabhi, the cow. And he didn't approach her as a formality. He understood he needs her mercy. And by her mercy, he could approach Krishna. And he offered beautiful prayers of surrender. Not long after that, Varuna's agents captured Nanda Maharaj in the Yamuna. And Krishna Balaram went down to his abode in the river. And when Varuna understood what crazy nonsense my devotees are, they did this to your father. I never wanted them to do this. But still, I'm responsible because they're representing me. So he felt very embarrassed, and he offered beautiful prayers to Krishna and Balaram. Lord Shiva, when he sided with Banasura, he was fighting against Krishna. He's the founder of a whole sampradaya which teaches love for Krishna. The Pushti Marga is coming from Shiva's sampradaya. They're teaching love for Krishna of Vrindavan, Sri Radharani. How he's fighting Krishna. What to speak of Mohini Murti also caused him some illusion, transcendental illusion. So the beautiful prayers he offered to Krishna. When Krishna went to collect the sons of Sandipani Muni, Yamaraj was offering his prayers to Krishna. Bali was offering his prayers to Krishna. So they all had a similar mood. Their prayers were not just formalities. It was a time of a great crisis in their lives. It was a time when they were totally humbled. The prayers of Dhruva, Prahlad, Ambarish, the Prajetas, the prayers of the Gopis, the Gopi Gita, throughout all these beautiful places in the Srimad Bhagavatam, these prayers, they all have common qualities. Appreciating the supreme greatness of the Lord. Totally humbling oneself before that, the mercy of the Lord. And praying for the well-being of not only themselves, but of all living beings. And describing the incredible, glorious qualities and compassion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After Narayan Rishi explained these beautiful prayers of the personified Vedas, today's verse, he said, having heard these instructions about the Supreme Self, the Personality of Godhead, the sons of Brahma now understood their final destination. They felt perfectly satisfied and honored. They honored Sanandana with their worship. The Kumars, three of them are honoring and worshiping one among them. And through this beautiful prayers of the personified Vedas that Sanandana has narrated, they were perfectly satisfied. Ultimately, by all the Vedas, we are meant to understand our final destination and how to get there. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Krishna is non-different than his name. The highest destination can be achieved by chanting the holy names. But this information is given to us because unless we live with these principles, with this humility, with this value of the association of devotees, with the value of the great gifts of knowledge that the Vedas and the representatives of Vedas are giving, unless we really live in a spirit that Krishna gives us in Gita, the spirit of what it means to actually be a servant. When we just try honestly, earnestly, Krishna's pleased. And then the same vibration that sometimes puts us to sleep, this Maha Mantra, if you don't have the right attitude, the mantra could put you to sleep. But when we have the right attitude, it wakes us up. And then Kirtaniya Sadahari, we can't stop chanting the holy names. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much.